Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Wants support. Curtis Fleming is there on the edge of the area. Fleming for Craig Hignett. Hit it, Higgy. Higgy hits the trap. Goal!
Abanelli coming alive again. Janino wants the ball played to him. Abanelli spots out.
Welcome back to the Boer Breakdown Podcast with me, Johnny, Dana and Tom. We are the Boer Podcast that gives you the ins, the outs, the ups, the downs of Middlesbrough Football Club. And in the last 7 days, it's been a bit of a rollercoaster with back-to-back home defeats, the signing of Yannick Bolasie and Daniel Fisher, and the 0-0 draw with Norwich leaving Boer seventh in the Championship table. Dana, I'm going to kick things off with you, and we'll start just before the game with Neil Warnock and naming all three strikers on the bench, four if you want to include Duncan Watmore, with Bolasie filling in as the number nine to make his debut. It was a strange move from Neil Warnock, wasn't it?
It was, yeah. I wasn't expecting Yannick Bolasie to start, to be fair, just given the fact that he'd only joined a couple of days before the game and probably didn't have much training under his belt. But, yeah, he struggled for the most part, I think, because of Boer's game plan. We were looking to contain Norwich to nullify the threat, to sit deep, essentially, and soak up the pressure and then potentially hit them on the counter-attack. And he was isolated for a lot of the game. And, I mean, I'm not going to criticise his performance because it was the first time he'd played since, I think, March. So to get 55 minutes under his belt is good. Hopefully he can build up the fitness and then we can see him become a real valuable asset for us come the final stretch of the season.
Yeah, I thought he had a positive debut, but it was a clear game plan for Boro, wasn't it, Dan? It was very much just to sit back and try and grind up the draw. Do you think it worked pretty much to a T?
Yeah, it did. It was just lacking that quality in the final third, really. That you know, it was a typical Neil Warnock performance, and in hindsight, we really should have expected it because he seems to really like these games where the man-marking policy really works, and it did yesterday. It was really effective, the fact that you had Mark Bowler and Daniel Fisher marking two of the most potent threats of Norwich's team to, you know, limit them space and limit them opportunity to influence the game. It worked. I think midfield was really industrial. They were picking up the loose balls, and particularly in the second half when Buendia went off, they were making sure that we did spring forward. It was just that lack of quality, like I said, that that sort of did us over in the end, getting the 3 points. But it was a good performance, and I don't think we can really complain. It wasn't one for the neutrals, of course, but it was a performance and a tactic that Boer really needed to adopt in the game, given the quality that Norwich have. And yeah, the fact that we limited them and we didn't allow them a single shot on target the first time since Chelsea did that, I think, last season. So, yeah, it was a really good performance.
It was. But Tom, Dana has been alluding to it there about final third. But in that first half, it was very much out of context, pure this ball, where there was nothing, there was no one going forward, and Jed was the furthest forward. There's about 10 centre-backs. It was 10 players for Norwich at the back, to be fair. But in the second half, we started to get bodies forward, and it just seemed we lacked a little bit in the final third, didn't we?
Yeah, I think that was just the way we were set up to play. We noticed that about 10 minutes into the first half, we were going all in on the man marking with Fisher and Bowler being dragged over the other side of the pitch and into centre midfield at times. But I think that's why you had Spence and Johnson picked to play on the wings. And I've mentioned this before on the pod. I feel like when they're picked, it's because of their defensive qualities and they can double back on threats on the wings. I don't think they're the greatest we have for going forward. I think if we had Roberts or Watmore, or even if you're putting Bolasie out on the wing, there's a bit more quality there going forwards. But it was all part of the game plan. We nullified them well. We were trying to hit them on the counter-attack, trying to use Johnson and Spencer's attacking qualities as well. It just we didn't have enough going forward in the second half. I thought, I think we did have some good chances, which came from the centre midfielders pressing higher in the second half, getting heavy on the first touch for some of the Norwich centre midfielders. I think Johnny Howson did really well in particular with that. He launched a few chances from doing that. It's just we didn't have enough up front to finish them, I think.
Yeah, you're absolutely spot on with the way we pressed, the way we won the ball back, and the way we're trying to get bodies forward in the second half was okay. It was relatively good. I think you're absolutely spot on when you say the lack of quality is there, and I think Borough just needed that probably a better centre forward to try and open the game up, or to try and pull defenders away to try and get more shots off. I felt like Akpom's running wasn't particularly good in the second half. I didn't think that he probably did enough. Did enough in the game to try and implement anything of sort, to be honest. But with Buendia being sent off, Tom, and around like the 60th minute, were you surprised that Borough didn't roll a dice and try and go for it in towards the end? Because, you know, the game was there to be won, I thought.
Not so much surprised, but I was wondering if we were going to go for it or not when that happened. I think, as we all know from Fulham at home last season, it is harder to play against 10 men, so it was a bit difficult. I mean, Norwich are even a strong team with 10 men, though. You look at who they brought off the bench when they went down to 10 men. It was that Placetta, who the Sky commentator said if he was still playing in the Premier League, he'd actually be the fifth quickest winger there. Ornel Hernandez came on as well. We're obviously well familiar with him. He's fast going forward. He's got skills, so if you commit too many forward there, you could still easily be hit on the counter-attack. And our approach was working up to that point. So I suppose it's just try and make the extra man count and hope for the best with it, really.
Yeah, so do you think it was a thing for Warnock of just trying not to lose the game? Because given that we probably didn't throw another striker on, or we didn't become more offensive, do you just think it was, don't try and get beat, try and stop the rot and get a valuable point away from home?
Yeah, I think it probably did better for us getting a draw. Obviously, it would have been great if we'd won as well. But especially after the last couple of games, to go somewhere like Norwich and get a nil-all draw, that's probably a lot better than for confidence and say going for it, getting hit on the counter-attack and getting beat by a 10-man team 1-0. I think it was probably the right approach in hindsight.
Yeah, and the approach that we played was built on the defence, and I thought Gil Fry yesterday coming back from such a bad injury last week, and we thought, oh God, this could be a couple of weeks, 3 weeks out. And I thought he was excellent yesterday. Gil Fry, he headed everything away. He was good positionally. He made things really difficult for the centre forward Pukki to really create anything. And I thought when he went down, it was like, oh, this could be a bit of a miss for us. But were you guys impressed with him yesterday? Do you think? Did Wednesday's performance against Rotherham show like how much we need Del Fry? Because it's quite clearly what he brings to the table. Who wants to take? Anyone want to?
Yeah.
See how impressed we were with Del Fry?
Yeah, I mentioned it in the post-match write-up that we absolutely did miss him on Wednesday. It's just he's thrived so much under Neil Warnock. And I had a lot of question marks over Del Fry before because I just don't think his performances were strong enough or consistent enough. He wasn't really strong enough in those aerial battles as well. And he is just completely shone this season. He really, really has. And you could tell that the work with Warnock on the training pitch has worked. It's worked a treat. And yeah, like I said, we absolutely did miss him on Wednesday. In fairness to Nathan Wood, he is young, so he's going to have games where he's not necessarily on song, But Dill Fry was absolutely fantastic yesterday. And if it wasn't for Darnell Fisher, he would have been my pick for man of the match. He was absolutely superb. And like you said, he really stifled the threat of Timu Pukki, because Timu Pukki is quite an all-round striker. He likes to bring players into other players into the attack, which is what the commentators were picking up on yesterday. And he barely had a sniff, really. There was a couple of moments where he did bring players into play. But overall, Dill Fry really dealt with him, and it was a fantastic performance from Dill Fry, and he just keeps going from strength to strength, which is fantastic to see.
Yeah, it really is. He's starting to mature into a really positive centre-back. I think the one big difference that Dill Fry and Ben Gibson have is that Ben Gibson was able to get promoted, and I think that is where, if Middlesbrough were to sell him, they'll lose the most value, because I think with Dill Fry, yes, he has a lot of potential, yes, he has qualities there, but I feel like if you're going to sell him to, say, a Burnley or a Crystal Palace, so I feel like that's where he'd probably end up. I feel like you'd probably be lucky to get about 10 million from it, if that, to be honest. Because I just think on the resume of his resume, I just don't think it's particularly great at the minute. But he is flourishing to be a very, very good centre back. Well, let's chat about someone else. I want to chat about Jed Spence a little bit, Tom. He seems to be a bit of a boo boy at the moment with his recent performances. Do you think? He seems like a player that's out of form, but do you think it's fans have a right to be concerned?
Yeah, I mean, I think just based on form at the moment, I don't think he's been great at right back, and I think it's fully justified the signing of Darnell Fisher to compete with Dysdale for that right back spot. And then I think it's a similar situation to Hayden Coulson, I think, in trying to figure out what Spencer's best position is, because I think he does have a good amount of skill going forward. He needs to improve his decision making, I think, but that'll come with time. I think he's still on the young, but I don't think he's great defensively. I think he's better going, I mean, I've said before, he's got defensive qualities. So when we're playing him on a wing, he does come back, and he's got that kind of position, but I don't think he can play right back. So he's kind of more of a defensive winger, but as well, he needs to kind of improve his decision-making going forward. I'd hope he can be worked on by Warnock and hopefully get him back to some sort of form. But yeah, I think the fans are right to be concerned at the moment based on current form.
Yeah, it's an interesting one with Jed Spence. I think you're right. He's a right back's probably not his role, or a winger's not his role. But I think that wing back, which is quite a modern, I would say it's quite a modern position now in the game, because the way that teams are playing three at the back a lot more now, especially in the Italian, but also in the Italian league, but also in the Premier League as well, where we've seen Chelsea revert back to that three. We've also seen the likes of Wolves play that a very similar formation as well, and it seems to pretty much suit him. And I thought he played his best football last year, where he was part of a three, where the three was at the back, three at the back, and he was playing as a wing back because he had the defensive cover, he had his duties, and he didn't have to commit too much going forward. But he was able to maintain a solid position there. But then, Do you think Borough fans should maybe lay off a little bit with the criticism? I know pretty much contradicting myself a little bit with what Tom was saying there. But should we start to lay off these younger type players? Because it was similar with Tav it still is with Tav, where people are very, very critical of his performances. The guys are only 20 year old. They're still very young, still very raw as professionals. Do you think we should be more patient with this, or do you think we should be, you know, going with like the Simpsons meme where everyone's like got the flames and like the cornfall?
No, I think we should be patient. I mean, it's easy to say that now after the game, but when you watch it back, and you know, like the Rotherham game, for example, he switches off, and you know, the game before that, he switches off there as well, and it costs us a goal. So in those moments, it's hard not to be critical. And I think although he is young, there is obviously criticism that is justified, like Tom said there. But yeah, he is only young. And I suppose, I know I mentioned about Hayden Coulson a couple of podcasts ago that I sort of criticised him. It's a little bit different for me with Hayden Coulson. He has been in and around the first team squad for a while now. And it was Jed Spence's debut season last season. He did set quite a high bar of expectation because he did have a really good opening campaign. So it's just, you know, he's been a victim of his own standards, really, that he set the bar quite high. And he hasn't really progressed this season, but I do agree with Tom. I think he's stuck in the middle like Hayden Coulson. Neil Warnock needs to find out what his position is. I agree with you, Johnny, where you said that, you know, right wing back's probably his role. But he needs to find it, and he needs to find it quickly, because Borough fans are quite critical. And sometimes rightly so, sometimes it is unfair. But he needs, you know, this is a small bump in the road for Jed Spence. He needs to grow from it and improve and just make it a part of his armour and just make sure that he progresses from here, because obviously criticism is landing at his door. And, you know, he does need to improve. It's a simple fact. He's been off form recently, and as much as we love him on this podcast, he does need to step up.
Yeah, it's very much hot and cold, isn't it, with young players. And in this division as well, the Championship, it's so inconsistent. You can have some great games against the top sides and lose against the bottom sides. But I think with Jed, I think, like, you're right, he is hot and cold. His form's not great at the moment. And I think that he's going through a phase where he needs to be remarkably patient with his opportunities, but also his development as well. I think with him right now, I think it's more of like a slingshot where he's came on the scene and he has to go back to go forward again. I think he has to really learn the principles of his defensive game. And once he's nailed that, and he's nailed that, what Neil Warnock wants from him, I feel like you can move on to more of the attacking side of it. I think if he's going to play that right back role, or he's going to compete with Daniel or with Dykesdale, then he needs to learn from them too and take a couple of hours on the training ground and put the work in to really propel himself in the next development, because I think he has got a lot of tools to succeed. I completely agree with Warnock. I think he's got everything to really... He can go right to the very top if he needs to. But I just don't think right now he's showing any of that. I think he just needs to really work on that defensive outlet first, because that's where he's been switching off. And then if he wants to play as a wing back, or he wants to go further forward, then spend 3 or 4 hours a day or a couple of hours after training just knocking balls into the box, just constantly running down the line, knocking them in. And that's where you'll probably learn. It's that practice makes perfect. But then also, if he has that talent, then he has that drive to really kick his career on, then I feel like he can do whatever he wants to do. But yeah, it's a strange one with Jed Spence at the moment. But I kind of agree with some of the criticism, but I'm also, part of me is just like, you just need to lay off the really young players, and I think need to lay off the academy players in general, because I think as a club, I feel like we're very critical of the young players that we bring through, because the one of us, we want them to perform, but also I think we care so much, we just like get overly critical of what we want to bring in. But Tom, do you think we're a little bit critical as well of these young players coming through, especially like if they're from the academy?
I feel like it's quite similar to what Dana said about Jed, that he's a victim of his own standards. I feel like that could be the same thing with our academy. When you look at some of the people who've come through it, had a great first couple of seasons and were part of the team straight away, Stuart Downing, James Morrison, even people like Stuart Parnaby at that point were getting in the team quite consistently. But I feel like there's maybe a little bit too much pressure from that kind of going forward. I think we've seen it quite a lot over the years, like Joe Bennett being an example. I know there was quite a lot of pressure on him, and Andrew Taylor, I think, as well, when he came through. Also, you look at kind of our centre-backs and the standards they've set, like Wieter, Ben Gibson. I think every centre-back that's came through, everyone's always said they're a future Borough captain, they're a future England captain, they're going to get in the England team.
And they all play at the younger English levels as well, and they're really starting to progress. Yeah, I know what you mean.
You look at like some of the other players that have come through our academy with like massive hopes on them, like Bryn Morris and Harry Chapman. Obviously, that goal that went viral after Chapman scored it in the, was it the Youth Champions League or something, was immense. But I think even from that age, like, pressure's been put on them. So I think, yeah, we probably do expect a bit too much too soon for these players coming through. But I think you only have to look at people like Fry and Tav to show that does eventually come. I was the same as Dana with Dil Fry. I had questions about him. We've heard for ages that he was the best centre-back to come through the academy. He was going to be so much better than Ben Gibson. And for the last few seasons, I've been like, I don't see it. But I said on a podcast at the end of last season, certain managers can get the best out of players. And I think that's definitely happened with Dil Fry and probably with Tav as well. So I think that just shows what time can do to help these players. If we just kind of give them, be a little bit patient with them, it'll pay off in the long run.
Yeah, I think it's a test of their mentality as well, and it'll be a test of Jed's mentality to see how he can bounce back from this tough spell. I will say that a tough spell doesn't make a bad player. They're just going through it a little bit and they need to work through it and see what's going wrong, identify what's going wrong, and then address it. I don't think we should... Similarly to when they come through, and a lot of the time you do see that the hype appear and it gets maybe a little bit too much, I think similarly on the other side of things, we shouldn't criticise them too much as well. Of course, don't protect them in a bubble and say that, you're fine, you can get away with it because you're young. It's a little bit inexcusable to be switching off in the Championship when then you get punished for it. So times like that, criticism is justified, but I wouldn't go overboard with it, like I wouldn't go overboard with the praise either.
Yeah. I think what you're saying there, Dan, I think tough spells make good players. I think there's with Jed right now, I think we're in a weird position too, where like he can't, like, say after a game now, if he's had a bad game, normally he'd sit with his mates or fancy coming up to the Northeast for a couple of days, come and sit with us, or like his family come up and live with me for a few days, let's get over like these bad performances. You can't really do that now. He's probably like a 20-year-old living by himself or living with a partner, and like that's it. And it'd probably be so hard for him to like decompress after a game, and he's probably thinking about that quite a lot. But it was funny you mentioned Dil Fry, Tom, as well, because it's took him 5 years to be at this level. Remember when he first came on the scene under Ito Karanka against Preston, and now look, it took 5 years, 5-6 years since then for him to really develop, and that has to come with time, and it comes with games and mistakes as well. Like, remember how many mistakes Dil Fry made a couple of seasons ago, and everyone was slating him, saying he wasn't good enough, not a footballer, and now everyone sings his praise. It's going to be very much the same with every academy player that we bring through. And it's just that time for patience, and patience comes with every single player, and especially with transfers too, where a new player come in. Daniel Fisher, Yannick Bolasie, they need time. Doesn't matter if you come from England or from overseas, like, you will need time, or you'll need a year to really bed in to a team. Hence why loan players aren't always particularly great. They need to get up to speed very, very quickly. But let's chat about transfers and loan players and all that kind of fun stuff, because Yannick Bolasie signed this week with also Daniel Fisher. They both made the debuts yesterday, both subbed off, with Yannick Bolasie playing for 55 minutes. First game for like 330 plus days. Daniel Fisher hadn't played for a couple of months, and he was voted man of the match yesterday. But what did you guys think of the debuts of the two new players yesterday? Did you think they were really positive for Borough fans to really look at, really? Do you think everyone would be happy with them?
Go on, Tom.
Go on, Tom.
I think, yeah, I thought Daniel Fisher did really well. I can see why he won Sky Sports Man of the Match awards. For me, he was kind of joint top with Johnny Howson for that. But I was really impressed with him. Yannick Bolasie, I don't think we could expect too much from him, considering he hadn't played in so long. But what I did notice from his performance was the experience that he clearly has, because he was using his body quite well, jumping into headers, winning them, which we're not used to seeing too much from our strikers this season. But I think that experience kind of saw him through. Obviously, we'd love to see the kind of performances from Bolasie. Like, I think there's that famous kind of trick that he did against Liverpool, where he did the swipe at the ball on the ground and then ran past the fullback. We'd all love to say that, but I think that's going to come with match sharpness. But I think what he did yesterday was used as experience quite well.
Yeah, do you think he's going to bring that experience to the dressing room, Tom, and that extra quality?
Yeah, definitely. I think that's one of the positives of signing all the players. And I think we've kind of seen that with Sam Morsy this season as well. I mean, he's 29, Bolasie's 31. They've been around the game for quite a long time. They can help some of our younger players. And it is quite a young squad. So, it can only be a benefit for the dressing room, I think.
Yeah, I completely agree. I think he can only bring good qualities to the team. Even though like my boss is an Everton fan, he was just not. He was just like, oh, he just went, oh, good luck. Yeah, you're not going to enjoy Yannick Bolasie. I was like, oh, well, you never know. You never know. He could be decent. But I want to speak about Daniel Fisher, Dana. 26-year-old, 300k. After the game yesterday, you know, he went home. He put his keys, his wallet, his Elton John's Greatest Hits album on the table, and Todd Cantwell was in there as well. Yeah. So he was very, very good, Daniel Fisher, yesterday. Do you think he's an absolute snip for 300k?
Yeah.
Well, the reported fee, of course.
Yeah, he took to the game like a fish to water, didn't he? He was fantastic. And
Daniel Fisher
for the water. I was hoping someone would pick up on that. But yeah, he was fantastic. But what I will say, and I know I'm sounding like a little bit of a Debbie Downer here, is it was a good start, but that's all it was. It's only downhill from here, Daniel. But no, it was fantastic, and quite rightly so, man of the match. And to think that he hadn't played for Preston for a couple of months, he came off with cramp, and you know he did such a good job with that man marking policy. And I was worried at half time because I was thinking, surely you can't keep this up for the rest of the game. But in fairness to him, he did, and it was a really key part of Borough's play yesterday, just making sure that Todd Cantwell had no real impact on the game. And you could see he was frustrated. He was limited to pot shots from outside the box, which is exactly what we wanted, really. And I think that was a key indicator to the fact that it worked. And yeah, it was fantastic. But like I said, yeah, it's a good start, but that's all it is at the moment. Hopefully he can keep these performances up, because if so, then that is a snip. And in fairness, Preston fans said that they would miss him, and they were a little bit sad to see him go. So I think we've got a decent deal there with Daniel Fisher.
Yeah, definitely. I think he's going to be still standing in the next few weeks. I think with those performances, for sure. I thought he was brilliant. But looking at the transfer window in general, guys, one day left. Neil Warnock was very, very open in his press conference, saying that he wants one more sign before the deadline, or hopefully two, which was very realistic. But you never know with Middlesbrough Football Club as of late. But Team Talk was reporting a swap deal for Bristol City with Britain, Famara Diadu. But as I can report right now, Gregor McGregor, which is a fantastic
name. Is that
name,
what he's called?
Way.
No, that's not what
Gregor
he's called.
McGregor.
Is it?
Bristol City reporter. And he said that Diadu to Middlesbrough or Assam Belonga or just cash, it's not happening. We reported on Friday that no talks were taking place, and that's still the case. There is an interest, but no bids expected. And also, Bristol City are not in the market for Lukas Jukovic as well. So, it was a deal that was reported on Team Talk last night for Britt and Famara Diadu to switch places. I mean, do you think it would have been a good move anyway if it was to come off? I mean, it still can come off, but as of now, we don't really think it's going to happen. So, Dan, do you think it would have been a decent move? Both players out of contract.
Yeah, I mean, it's a good move in the sense that we're not letting Britt go for nothing. We would have been getting a player in return if that was true. Obviously, it's come out that it isn't. But at the same time, I just don't see the point, because whoever's brought in, and I realised this earlier, since I've been supporting Borough, we have never played to a striker's strengths. So for me, it doesn't matter who comes in. They're going to probably get the same treatment as Britt. They're going to get scapegoated. They're going to struggle. You can say, well, Jeju probably suits Warnock's style of play more than Britt does, but I'm still not convinced. And financially, it probably does make sense, because we would be getting a player, I would assume, on low wages than Britt is, so we're getting Britt off the wage bill and then a player in for less, on less money. But I just think it's a bit of a shoulder shrugging deal, if I'm being honest. That I looked at it and I was just like, well, okay, and you know, it was just one of those. I know Bristol City fans seem to like Zirkzee. He seems to have worked his way up into being quite well liked at Ashton Gate, but I must admit it's not one that I'm particularly bothered about either way. I'm sort of a little bit like Elliot, I guess, sat on the fence.
Rest in peace, Elliot. it's a strange one, isn't it? Like I feel like he would be a great addition to us, and getting Britt off the wage bill is also probably a massive bonus for us financially. I feel like it'd be a move which suits both parties, because both strikers are wanting to leave the respective clubs. Whether like it works, I don't really know. I feel like the stumbling blocks for both teams will be wages. Britt is on a high wage, and probably Amara is probably on a, no one said bigger wage, but he's not going to be cheap.
No.
Especially when you're buying players on a free, you can probably increase the wages a little bit because you're not paying a fee. But it could be a strange one. But Tom, do you expect Borough to be busy tomorrow? Do you think that it's it could be a place where Middlesbrough might actually bring in one or two players? And if so, who would you look for?
Well, I certainly hope so, because I've got the day off for it, so I will be watching Sky Sports News all day, and I'm sick of getting our hopes up on deadline day just to find out the manager's taking all the coaches down the pub because they're a great set of lads. But I believe Warnock, when he said in the press conference, they definitely want one more bringing in. I definitely hope we will see one incoming tomorrow, and I reckon we could probably see a couple of people leave on loan at least as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I hope it don't go breaking my heart, to be honest, Tom, because I really want a few signings, because I think we just need one or two more to like get us over the line, because I just feel like we're so weak at times. But yeah, we'll speak about outgoings then if you want, because Warnock has also mentioned that he'd be keen to let one or two go. Wing and Coulson have been mentioned throughout the month to potentially go on loan. Also, Sam Falaran could be gone as well. We've also seen Isaiah Jones go to Scotland too. Is it Queen of the South he went to?
Queen of the South, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Queen of the South. So, yeah, it's good for him to get game time, but those two players of Coulson and Wing could be a bit risky given that our squad's so thin. But do you expect them to move on? But also, do you expect Borough to actually let players go in general, given that we probably might not, probably, you know, we probably won't bring players in, to be honest?
No, I wouldn't get rid of anybody, just because, like you said there, the squad is so thin. Having said that, though, there's not many chances, even with the thin squad, that Lewis Wing gets. So I think out of everybody, he's probably the one that I can see leaving the most. Obviously, Coulson came on yesterday. So out of the two of those that you've mentioned there, I can see Lewis Wing going more than Coulson. But he mentioned Warnock that there has been inquiries. And I think much does depend on the business coming through the door, which will affect the business going out the door. Personally, I wouldn't get rid of anybody apart from, you know, Sam Falaran, who needs to go out and get some loan time potentially here in Hackney as well. But in terms of first team players, I just don't see it for me. I think loan some youth players out to give them that valuable experience that they need. But in terms of the likes of Lewis Wing and Hayden Coulson, just for security reasons of numbers, I think keep them. And in terms of incomings as well, I know he wants one more, and I think he does want a striker, but I would still improve the wings. I'm still looking at the wings and I'm thinking we need out and out wingers. You know, we have a lot of players that play, you know, wing back or can play fullback as well. I think we need an out-and-out winger, similar to Bolasie as well, just to add to it, just to give that little bit of different dimension to Borough's play going forward, where we have that pace, you know, we have somebody that's direct, and that is an out-and-out winger that has somewhat consistent deliveries at the box. I mean, as consistent as you can be for a championship winger. And, you know, there are players out there potentially, so yeah, I'd like to see another winger. Centre-half, I was thinking we needed one of them, but then with Dale Fry coming back, I don't think we need one of those anymore. Grant Hall's back as well. So, yeah, incomings, a winger, but outgoings, only the youth players for me.
Yeah, well, there is Kamil Grzycki, the 32-year-old Polish winger, at West Brom, out of contract in the summer. West Brom keen to get him off the books. Would you like to maybe maybe go for a deal, 18 months maybe, you know, because obviously when you hit about 34, you tend to be not worth as much value anymore unless you're truly spectacular. Do you think Borough should maybe look to bring him in just for a for now kind of player?
Yeah, maybe a contract until the end of the season. Or maybe a loan, similar to Bolasie, actually. If his contract is up, then bring him in on loan. Let him finish the rest of the season with us and then maybe decide from there. I don't think we should go into a deal where the player is entering the last 6 months of their contract and you know, bring them in January on an extended contract. I think similar deals to Bolasie, where we bring them in on loan and then we can assess the options after that. I think that's the best avenue for Borough to go down. So with Grzycki, if we can bring him in on loan, fine. But I think on a permanent deal, not so keen on that. There are other players as well that I think are escaping my mind at the moment. But fingers crossed we can bring somebody in.
Yeah, no, I 100% agree. But let's chat about one move that is nothing to do with Middlesbrough right now, but it's more management focused. That Jonathan Woodgate is going to be appointed first team coach at Bournemouth, Tom. Bit of a strange one, but do you think it's actually a good move for Woodgate just to get out of Borough and to, you know, to go to a promotion tip side?
In the long run, I think it is, yeah. I think he got kind of fast-tracked into management quite quickly. And I know he said in the interview he did not too long ago that he thought he had the experience, but I do think there were times when he was managing us where the lack of experience did show. So I just think the more coaching experience he can get, the better it's going to be in the long run for his manager career.
Yeah, I actually think it's a great move for him. Same. I really do. I think it's just like, you know, I was like, you know, like the Freddie Hearn meme. Like, bloody hell, how'd you manage that one? I was like, a little bit in it. Like, he's managed to land on his feet and get a good job there. Oh yeah, I really hope he smashes it. To be honest,
he'll be the Bournemouth manager at some point because Jason Tindall's under fire.
Yeah, so imagine Johnny Walker being a Bournemouth manager at the end of the season. And he gets them promoted or something. It would be like the most Borough thing ever.
In fairness to him, though.
We've still got to play him as well, so, you know, he's guaranteed a win against us.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. In fairness to him, though, he came into Borough and he did want to play that sort of slick, possession-based football, didn't he? And he just didn't have the players to do so. At Bournemouth, they do have the players to do so. So, you know, Jason Tindall, to me, is the Frank Lampard of the Championship. He's just out of his depth. Wouldn't be surprised to see him leave in the next couple of weeks, maybe even the next month, and then it's a perfect avenue for Jonathan Woodgate to take over.
Yeah.
Agent Woodgate.
He signed a four-year deal, didn't he, Jason Tindall? So it's a bit of a tough one. I think that I feel like he'd probably... I think they'll probably still have him at the end of the season, but, I mean, they have just lost, like, three on the spin, haven't they? So... Mm. I mean, it makes sense for him to be under fire. But speaking of teams that are out of form, back to Borough, Dana. Middlesbrough have lost four out the last six. One clean sheet in nine. Apart from yesterday, where we looked relatively good and steady and we started to stop the rot, are you a little bit concerned with Borough's form at the minute?
No, because I sort of expected it. I know I mentioned a few times in previous podcasts about injuries. I kept saying that, you know, if we get injuries, we'll probably end up falling off. I mean, we haven't, because nobody seems to want sixth place in the Championship. Even Bournemouth don't want it themselves. So I was always expecting it to happen, to be honest. And I guess in a way we were punching above our weight if you think about where we all expected ourselves to be at the start of the season. And I'm just happy that we are where we are. We're still within a shout of the playoffs. I'm not necessarily concerned. I know we've got a really tough game against Brentford to come, but I'm not concerned just because I'm just happy that we're not where we were last season. I know things have changed somewhat just because of the way this season's panned out so far, but form was always going to turn like this, I think, and I always earmarked February as a month of importance for Borough to see whether, you know, if we're still in and around the playoff places in February, then we could well still get into the top six. And, you know, we are, well, you know, we're still in and around, you know, we're seventh, we're still in and around those places. So I'm quite happy with the way the season's gone. The form obviously has taken a turn, but hopefully we can use that Norwich game yesterday as a springboard to replicate it against Brentford. Essentially, we saw what we can do against a top team, and top teams this season we haven't actually struggled against. The Watford game, first game of the season, was tight. The Bournemouth game was tight. We could have even won that one. The Norwich game, we were incredibly unlucky at the Riverside. So going into the Brentford game, I'm not worried given our form. I think as long as we replicate the performance against Norwich, we could well be okay. And I know we'll get into it in our Brentford preview. But yeah, I mean, obviously the game against Rotherham was shocking, to be fair. It was a real low point of the season, probably the worst performance of the season. But injuries really dictated that, I think. And if we had Tav, Dale Fry and Dykstra in that game, it would have been completely different, in my opinion.
Tom, do you think that's why Borough's form's changed, because of the injuries that Borough have had?
Potentially, yeah. I do think we play worse when Dykstra's out. Hopefully that'll be lessened now that we have Fisher in. And same kind of thing with Fry as well. But I still think we've done well to kind of be where we are. And we typically always have a bit of a slide around Christmas / January anyway. So I was thinking about that yesterday. I was like, oh yeah, how do we not see this coming? It's typical Borough.
Happens every year.
So someone on Sky Sports said it'd be typical Borough if we beat Norwich yesterday. I was like, that's nailed on now. We're probably going to do it. But yeah, I think now that we're getting some reinforcements in, some of the injuries are coming back. I don't see why we can't just crack on and start getting on a good bit of form again.
I think Dyke still is the important one, isn't he? Both he and Tav probably, well, actually, the all three players that were out against Rotherham are, in my opinion, our most important players. If we can get two of those back, it would be fantastic. I mean, Tav is a really big miss. We miss his energy going forward and in that transition. But Dykstra, for me, in defence, is a massive miss. And like Tom said there, hopefully Darnell Fisher has softened the blow a bit. But if those can come back, and Tav is out for a couple of weeks, isn't he? I think it was a knee injury or something. So probably have to wait a little bit longer with him. But Dykstra's injury was a strange one, as I told you in the group chat the other day. But we'll see when he gets back. I think Borough will hopefully improve. There's a lot of hoping going on. There's an awful lot of hoping going on.
The podcast of hope.
Yeah.
No,
I don't think I've ever... Like,
go on. You know, none of this negativity anymore. This is a podcast of hope, joy and happiness.
I honestly don't think I've said the word hopefully and fingers crossed as much in my life.
Well, don't let the sun go down in your dinner, to be honest, because let's chat about Brentford then, because a game that we always used to enjoy playing against Brentford.
I did.
And I really do like Brentford as a club, and every time we speak to Beast Spotters and the guys over there, we always have a good laugh with them. So it's a game that doesn't get any easier, and it doesn't get easier for Borough's form either, but it's a good game to get the form right again. But Dana, let's break down Brentford. The mic is yours for the Perries, whoever wants to go first.
Yeah, well, I'm going to take a little bit of a turn. I'm not actually going to break Brentford down just because we've played them twice this season, or it feels like longer than that, much more than that. So people should know their style of play now. But yeah, the general consensus is that you know, they're having a pretty decent season, not as well as they might have expected given last season. I would say they're a little bit like us when we went up. You know, we started in and around there, and then you know, we clinched automatic promotion. I still expect them to clinch automatic promotion, to be fair, but the last game against Wickham, I mean, it really showed their attacking quality. 7-2 was the result. But maybe a potential silver lining for Borough in that game is that their defence was pretty bad. And at half-time, I was having a look at the forums. A couple of their fans were expecting the game to be a lot tighter than that, given the shaky defence. Somebody even said that they expected it to be 4-4 rather than 7-2. But such is the quality that they have. I mean, their front line is absolutely fantastic, probably the best in the division, I'd say, along with Norwich. And that is an avenue, I think, for Borough to exploit. I don't think it's actually going to be I don't think Brentford are going to steamroll us that people might expect, given the fact that they beat Wickham by 7-2. So there is something in it for Borough. it's a real test of Borough's attacking qualities, I think, in this game. And defensively against Norwich, we were sound. We need to be sound again because Ivan Toney's back on the goal trail, as shown against Wickham. We got two goals in that match, 22 shots in that game and 18 on from open play. So, you know, there are a possession-based team. They will try to take the game to you and really try to use those attacking players to be able to kill you, basically. So, like, they killed Pooter Wickham. So, yeah, I mean, it's obviously going to be a tough game, but I think, to be honest, I can see it being tight. I know that the game that we played earlier against them, when we had a couple of COVID cases, was completely different. I think we should take that out of the equation because it was a different Middlesbrough team and it was a different Brentford team. But even the game against them earlier this season was tight. So, yeah, it's going to be tough. But I'm kind of hopeful, again, carrying on this theme of hope. I'm quite hopeful of this game that we can get something out of it.
I can't talk you a bit.
I think, speaking of tight games, they've shown that a lot in their recent form. They've only actually had four games since we played them in the FA Cup. But what they've done in that time, they beat Luton 1-0 in the game after that. Then Leicester beat them 3-1 in the FA Cup last weekend, which it could have been us. Might have been worse, so probably a good thing, lads. They had a 1-1 draw with Swansea in midweek, and then obviously the 7-2 win against Wickham yesterday. So that one against Wickham's kind of really the outlier. Has been close games for them since they played us at the start of the month.
Yeah, I believe that they're on 16 games unbeaten, I believe, Brentford now, which is they're only 9 games short of Reading's unbeaten streak when they won the league. So you never know. It's a perfect time for Borough to beat them. But guys, do you have any score predictions for the game?
1-1. I'm going to go 1-1.
1-1.
I wouldn't be surprised to see a very similar lineup to what played yesterday. So I'll go 0-0.
0-0. 1-1. I'm going to go. Oh god, a tough game. I think Brentford might have the extra quality. I think that even though it's going to be a tough game for both sides, and we normally do perform better against the better teams, I think they may have a bit more quality than us in the final third, especially if Dale Fry is not 100% again, and it could be a difficult game for us. So it could be 1-2 Brentford to win 2-1, I think. But I'm going to be hopeful, and you never know, we might win. But Dana, just before I sign off, the Sun have reported that Borough are in for Grant Campbell Kruzicki now on a 6-month loan deal. So
I thought you were going to mention something about the sun is shining and we're all hopeful. I was expecting you to say that.
No, I'm not going to like quote like Twister or something. You know what I mean? Singing hopeful, but Campbell Kruzicki 6-month deal until the summer. So Denimal. ITK. I don't know how the Sun have managed to get involved, but they're probably phone hacking like they used to with Piers Morgan. So that's pretty much it, guys. Thank you very much for joining me, as always. If you listen to the podcast as well, do give us a 5-star rating on Apple Podcasts, or follow us on Spotify or any other podcast app you provider. It helps us get found and also get charted in your individual country, but then also gets charted around the world as well. So that'd be really cool. But that's it. Borough remain just outside the playoffs, but if we were to get back in there, then we need to take a leaf out of Daniel Fisher's book and grab the league by the balls. But this has been the Borough Breakdown podcast, and that was all your match day chatter in a pod up the Borough Breakdown.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more, with Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to Quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Hey, marketers, advertisers, and business owners. Find yourself chatting up the same audience in the same places, using the same old lines? Maybe it's time to podcast the net further to catch your next customer. With Acast, there's plenty of fish in the sea with more than 100,000 podcasts and millions of listeners. So there's a perfect match for every business. Use our ad platform to cast your net, then narrow down using targeting such as demographic, show categories, audience segments, and more. Find your match, then reel them in. Advertise on more than 100,000 podcasts with Acast. Head to go.acast.com/closer to get started.